You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 168 of Retired Racehorse Radio on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products and Ride TV. Retired Racehorse Radio is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse, brought to you in cooperation with Retired Racehorse Project and New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program.
On today's show, we chat with Linda Hawk of Tapestry Equine Products and learn more about her experience with ex-racehorse sensitivity, leading to the development of her innovative line of products. Then we sit down with New Vocations' Amanda Grace for a new training tip and adoptable horse of the week. Stay tuned.
And they're off on Retired Racehorse Radio, the podcast that is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse.
This is Joy Orr in Detroit, Michigan.
And this is Kristen Kovach-Bentley in Jamestown, New York, and you are listening to Retired Racehorse Radio. Joy, you're back!
I'm back. It's crazy.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
And I know for a fact that Archer is in your lap, so hello as well to Archer.
He is. He may squawk. I don't know. We're going to figure this out as we go.
Baby podcasting, folks. We're doing it live.
Yes.
This is how you know. Well, it's not actually live. You're listening to us whenever you're listening to us. It's not live. But regardless, there might be some babies. It's fine.
I mean, our editors are magical, but we'll see how magical they're going to be depending on the sounds he creates.
Yeah, don't say that too loud. He's going to be like, hold my beer. I mean, hopefully not. I don't know much about babies. I don't think you're supposed to give them beer at that age.
I mean, I feel like my daughter would if she had the opportunity, but yeah, Archer's a little bit more docile in that manner. He's a sweet, sweet boy.
Love it. Someday yeah. I'll meet my podcast niece and nephew. Winter is a terrible time to drive to Detroit. So. So yeah, how's the life? How's the motherhood of twins life?
There's something about having your babies in winter that you don't really feel like you're missing out on anything because you're just inside. Mm. And that's really helpful. So by the time summer comes, they're going to be fun. They'll be like 8 months old. So like the majority of the hard work is done. They have head control and can crawl around and play with each other. So I'm excited for that by the time warm weather actually shows up. But we're just kind of getting through baby snuggles right now. It's been good. How about you? How are things? Because you have a new farm you're working on. I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, we are still in the straddling two mortgages stage of this multi-phase operation. So we've moved over our Christmas holiday, which was a great way to use like a week of downtime, but also was a horrible way to use a week of downtime because I didn't actually get any downtime, but it's fine because we're all moved in by the time I was back to work. Like my office was set up, like we were ready to roll, so that was good. But until we sell our old house, we can't buy the farm part, so I can sit here and I can look at it, but I don't want to start working on it obviously until we like own it. But in the meantime, there's plenty to work on in the house, so that's fine. So we are ignoring all of the like boring projects that we should be doing and like trying to plant our vegetable garden because that's who we are, but there's really like a few projects we probably need to tackle in the house relatively soon. So
I mean, a new house always has projects.
Always. An old house always has projects because at some point we're going to have to go back to the old house and like do some projects there, like a little bit of touching up paint. Hopefully we think it's only touching up paint. We're going to meet with a realtor and find out exactly what we have to do. Cross your fingers that it's just touching up paint because I don't really want to spend oodles of time back in that house trying to fix everything. But
try to find like housekeepers who specialize in like a move out special.
Oh heck yeah.
Yeah, I used this is not sponsored. I wish they'd sponsor us, but I think it's like the Next Door group. And they'll like it's like a social media based on where you live, and they kind of like concentrate people together based on streets. So you all chat about the gossip in the neighborhood and recommend it. Sometimes I just like to see what is going on because I'm nosy and bored talking to children all day. But I was able to find a phenomenal housekeeper for us, which helped during my pregnancy. But when I learned that they have specials to like get your house ready to have people walk through it and you don't have to do that cleaning, It made it so much easier to think about moving out of my house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like having that like care at the end. Yeah, because it's going to need a deep clean. Like, I would like to think that we're relatively like clean people, but like still, it's going to need like a deep clean and a deep shampoo. And like the, you know, we had a vaulted ceiling and the thing with the skylights, like those need to get like swept out because there's cobwebs way up there. And I was like, all right, I will hire professionals. We hired professional movers. That was absolutely the best money we spent, was having these like three. Yeah, these three professional dudes who were like very good natured. We moved on the day of an ice storm, which was a terrible plan, but obviously we didn't know the weather at the time that we booked them. But these guys were like very cheerful about it. And we were like, we're trying to hustle you guys, you know, like so that you can get home. And they're like, oh, no, we're good. We're good. You know, one guy fell on the ice. He was fine. Another guy got smashed by a large, heavy safe, but he's fine. So they we tipped well and sent them on their way. But good. Yeah, professionals are absolutely the way to go for stuff like that. So
yeah, I'll have to have you tell Zach when we make the decision if we're staying or moving in our house, because he is a I like to do it myself kind of person.
Nope. Once you're either over 30 or you have children or both, if you have like adult money at that point, like just pay for the movers.
Yes.
Because like the farm has a box truck. Like we could have done it in the box truck. And that's how we did when we moved from our first apartment to the house that we're selling, is like we got a bunch of family members together, but we were all in our early 20s. And that was much easier to do when you're like early to mid 20s, to be like, we'll buy everybody beer. Come help us move our couch. Well, like, that's fine. But yeah, you get to a point where you're like, hang on. Like, why did we work so hard if not to pay for people to move all of our stuff? Like, that was choice. So,
yes.
That's for like sure. My single biggest record. I recommend them to everybody. I recommended them to my vet because she's moving and she was like, oh my God, lifesaver. So like the vet is using my movers. I was like, absolutely. Everybody needs to use these people. They're so good.
You are doing the Lord's work. Thank you, Crispin.
Yeah. I'm like become an influencer for Dan's Moving Company. It's fine. If you're in Western New York, Dan's Moving Company, give them a call. Tell them I sent you.
I'm super excited to watch because like housing stuff, it all takes a lot of time. So you will have lots of stories to share, especially as you start to unearth things in this new house. Hopefully positive things. I hope you find treasure.
I found a cool skeleton key in a door. That was neat. Yeah, I'm trying to do just for fun because I wanted to see if I could, because I guess I don't have enough to do in during the day. I was like, I'm going to see if I can do a reel every single day. So Painted Forest Farm is the farm in the house's Instagram account. Right now it's just house because we don't have any farm. But I'm just doing weird little snippets of our life as we move and fix things and break things and replace things. So, yeah, give me a follow. See what we're up to.
And if anyone's looking to move toward near Jamestown, I've been to Kristen's former home and it is cute. And I love
it's
your
very bed. Nice. If you like to like live remote kind of in the woods, there's a Boy Scout camp behind it. So there's I don't know how many hundreds of acres that will not be developed behind you. And then there's woods across the street. There's a little creek that runs through. The creek doesn't flood. It's really, really nice. It's near Chautauqua Institution. So if anyone is into like the cultural scene, they have speakers, they have an opera, they have performers, they have a ballet. That's right around the corner. And it's close to Chautauqua Lake. So
a very easy drive off the highway as someone who's visited you. So
this is true. Yep. We're right between I-86 and I-90. Very easy to access. So you can load your horses on the trailer and hit it up and go. There is not enough acreage at that house to keep a horse, but there's definitely enough acreage to keep chickens if you wanted to. And there's already raised beds because we built them. So
your backyard is very magical and whimsical.
It's very park-like. Yeah. It's a nice spot. So, but yeah, we'll do some video tours of this new place, especially once it hits springtime, because this new place is very nice as well. So
that for you.
Super yeah, lots of stuff coming up. Yeah. Let's see. In the meantime, let's see. Jobber had an abscess that was apparently hurt him so deeply that he just laid down in a snowstorm, like flat out, and was like, just go ahead and take me. Like the snow was piling on his face. And my brother-in-law was like, you have to come and check on your horse because I think he's dying. And I was like, it's an abscess. And he was like, I cannot. So yeah, he's real dramatic. I put some stuff on our Facebook page to just pay forward the little IV soaking bag that I used, because I do think that is a superior way to soak a foot. If you are tired of trying to get your horse to stand in a bucket, and use the IV bag. It's so much easier. So super easy. Yeah, just cut one end off, put your soaking agent in, insert foot, tape it around the leg, and the horse can stand there and wave their foot around and be mad about it, but they can't actually get out of the bag. So
that's brilliant.
Yeah. And I cannot take credit for that. My friend Allison Howell was like, you need IV bags. And I was like, cool. I don't have a vet that like runs IVs very frequently. So when she comes to visit, she's like Santa Claus. She brings me a bag of IV bags. So it's
love that.
Weird, but great.
So. Oh, jobber. Astrid.
Yeah, he's fine now.
Yeah. So.
Ugh, Astrid, living her best life.
She is living her best life, but it's fun to go see her. I think she misses my pregnancy belly because she checks it and then almost
Yeah. Do you think she's like, what happened here?
She's like, where are my heartbeats that I was listening to? Because we haven't taken the babies to meet her yet. Just again, with the season that we had them, not really wanting to drag two infants out in the cold like that. Yeah. So they'll get to meet in the spring.
Yeah, but, much better choice.
Yes. But she is living her best feral life, getting lots of attention and love throughout.
Love it. Cool. Well, you let me know when I can send you guys a baby calf for the twins.
Well, my daughter's obsessed with cows, so yes. Perfect.
Great. Yeah. I will get one in the mail to you shortly.
I love it. I love it. But I'm super excited to be back. I know we're going to have a packed episode, and I think I have to remember how to podcast to a degree, so listeners, bear with me.
All right, I got you.
If you hear a child in the background, we're doing our best with two infants, but before we get into all things great at Retired Resource Radio, we're going to hear from our premier sponsor, Kentucky Performance Products.
Is your horse suffering from respiratory problems like intermittent coughing, nasal discharge, seasonal allergies, poor performance, or difficulty breathing during exercise? Kentucky Performance Products has a new supplement, Airwise, that can help. Formulated using a synergistic blend of high-quality, potent antioxidants and micronutrients, Airwise is research-proven to help horses maintain healthy respiratory function. It has been shown to promote normal respiratory rates, enhance lung function, support a healthy inflammatory response in airways, and maintain immune health. To see if Airwise, available through veterinarians, is right for your horse, speak with your vet, visit kppusa.com, or call 859-873-2974. Well, Joy, I'm excited to kick off our first recording of the year with Linda Hawk from Tapestry Equine, who I think actually, Linda, you and I have met, you know, and you're definitely going to remember this because we met at an equine affair where you probably met about 10,000 people. So there's no way that you remember me. But your booth was down the row from us when I was working for Alfred University Equestrian Center years and years and years ago. So I sort of saw you in passing and your products at that Massachusetts Equine Affair, and they looked super interesting. So I'm really looking forward to learning more from you today.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite trade shows is Equine Affair in Massachusetts. Great people, great conversations. Love it there.
Yeah, that's a fun one. There's just like a good vibe. There's so many, you know, square feet of stuff. Joy and I have been to the Ohio one, but Joy, someday we're going to have to ship you all the way from Michigan to Massachusetts for that Massachusetts one, because that's a good one. So
yes. I've been there, but we haven't been there together.
No, we need to go together. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, we're here to learn more about Tapestry Equine. So describe your girth to us, because that's like the main kind of bread and butter of your products, right? So this Tapestry girth, what makes it different?
Okay, well, a great question. So can I just start with a tiny bit of history on
you
on
sure why, can.
Why I designed it, because then you'll understand why it's so different. So over 40 years in the industry, I trained with what would have been my ex-husband racehorses for 10 years. So I've lived that racehorse life of galloping early mornings, the babies, I've galloped myself, been in the starting gate, you name it, worked horses. And the whole process of girthing a horse at the racetrack is not necessarily a pleasant one. And a lot, if not most of the horses, if not all of them, are very girthy at the track. And when I transition them off the track, they take that with them. And I totally understand why, having seen what happens to them at a racetrack. So one of my last thoroughbreds that I bought off the track and transitioned to a show horse, I would literally bring my tack, regular riding tack, with a traditional leather girth, which had elastic at both ends. And in Canada, certainly in Ontario, the winters are cold and you cannot make leather soft. There's no two ways about it.
No.
So this thoroughbred, when he saw me coming, he'd go right to the back of his stall, drop his head, pin his ears, because he knew what was coming. And so it just, oh, and then the other big thing was I tack him up, take him out to the indoor arena, you know, then tighten the girth, get on. He wouldn't move forward at the canter. And I thought, oh, for God's sakes, you move beautifully on the lunge line. The only thing that changes is you get tacked up. And this is a custom fit saddle. So I thought, okay, I also have a degree in wildlife biology. So let's think about anatomy and physiology here. So yeah, okay, I'm a horse. The girth is essentially a bra. And would I want to wear a leather bra, one that's tight, that's restrictive, that's cold? And most leather girths, you know, they do have some ridging on them. So there's pressure points all along a girth. And I thought, okay, if I'm a horse, what do I want? I want to be able to breathe and move, but I still need to have that saddle not move. So what I did was I had the idea in my head of my girth, and I took it to a bespoke leather maker that wasn't too far from where I was in the time. That would be 2015. And as I'm telling Brian what I would like in this new girth, and I said, you know what? Unlike the elastic girths at the racetrack, so the elastic girth they use on race day, it is just a solid piece of 3-inch elastic. And you have to do that up really quite tight so that nothing moves. But they don't have anything central at the sternum. And again, so let's equate it to a bra. And it's like, okay, it's got to be symmetrical. It can't be moving across my chest, right? All right, well, let's make it symmetrical. Let's have a sternum plate. And then, okay, a horse does most of its breathing and expansion from the sternum up. Let's put the elastic there because it doesn't do any good underneath our leg at the top, really, okay? And so as I'm telling him what I wanted, he's drawing it out and he goes, you know what, Linda, I think you're onto something. And so the 3-inch elastic on my girths was what we used at the racetrack, that kind of idea. And then the cross pieces reflect back to the days that when I steeplechased and you would use an overgirth. And so that's how I got the idea of the 3-inch elastic and the cross pieces was my lifetime of experience. And so I'll never forget when I started using that new prototype on that thoroughbred that would not move forward at the canter, would go to the back of his stall. It took him about 3 weeks mentally to come around, but it went from that extreme to he knew I was there. I was bringing the tack. He was waiting for me at the stall because he had a Dutch door so he could hang his head out. I'd open up the Dutch door. He'd literally step a half a foot out and go, okay, come on, let's go. And we actually were able to compete jumpers with him once we put it on him. And so it's because of that horse, my life experience, equating it to a piece of equipment that, you know, women use, a bra. But I could say to anybody, hey, guys, you need a belt for your pants. You could have a leather belt. You can tighten it up. How comfortable is that? Go run and jump, bend over, sit down. Or I could put an elastic belt on you. It's still going to hold your pants up, but my God, man, it's going to be way more comfortable. And honestly, that's where it came from.
It makes so much sense, right? Because like athleisure wear is so popular now for people because we've all figured out like, hey, like stretchy pants are more comfortable right, than like jeans, jeans and a belt. Like, yeah, why have we not applied this to horses before now? It makes so much sense. Also, this is making me want to take my bra off. So thanks for that, Linda.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Horses, and again, I've had a long career, over 40 years in the industry as a competitor, eventing to advance back when we steeplechased. I was a technical delegate for eventing for 21 years, a pony clubber. I've been around a while. And horses, you know what? They want simple. They don't want complicated. And that can be the bit, the training, the feed, the tack. And so for me, it was always, this needs to be simple. It doesn't need to be complicated. You know, let's look at the anatomy and what is the most simplest design that we could come up with to address this? And the horses don't lie. And that's what I tell anybody as I travel to trade shows. You know what? Bottom line is they don't know the brand. They don't know the price point, but my God, they will tell you whether they like it or not.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. And it is interesting thinking about the horse industry as a whole, because it's so, you know, rooted in tradition. This is like such a long-standing activity, right? Riding horses. I mean, it goes back thousands of years. And we're so guilty sometimes of being like, why haven't we thought of this? And it's, I mean, really because we kind of get rooted in what we know. Mm-hmm. And it's worked for and I say worked, you know, with air quotes, which nobody can see because it's a podcast, right? But like, we think it's worked because we haven't known any better. But as we know more, we've had this conversation so much recently on this show, you know, of like, we know more about animals and the way they think and the way they react and the way they respond than we've ever known before, or we're paying attention to it more. And we're just able to, you know, shape everything, you know, from tack to training to experiences so much more like horse positive. So this is so cool to see, you know, like we are able to innovate these products that have really been around for thousands of years, right? Like a girth is such a simple thing in theory, right? So, you know, yeah, a lot of people would be like, well, it's worked. Why do we need to change it? And yeah, now we know so much more.
Well, you bring up a really good point there, Kristen, because again, as I travel around the world doing trade shows and have conversations with people, there's those that are in the camp of, you know what? I don't care what my horse says or does. This is the tack I'm using on it. Mm. And then you try and say, okay, you know, let's equate it to a human experience, be it the bra, a belt, whatever. But then what I love the most is when you are talking to people and going, you know what? Your horses are talking all the time. So that ear twitched, that tail twitched. They're bloating. They're protecting the musculature around the rib cage. They walk like a crab. They have trouble making the distance down a line, trouble picking up a lead, trouble spinning a certain way. And then they start to think, oh, you know what? That's interesting that you should say that, because you know what? My saddle fits. My saddle fitter just said my saddle's great. I said, well, how does your horse move on a lunge line? Because if your horse moves beautifully on a lunge line, and then it starts to deteriorate after you start putting tack on, well, then you need to start investigating what you're using. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's lots of options out there. And again, I wish people would, you know, kind of, you know, be a little bit more discerning. Interesting. I just posted a picture on my Facebook page yesterday of me competing a horse in 1983, back when I had leather brush boots that had buckles. One of the original body protectors was just a foam pad up the back, and you had a Velcro tab across the front. That's how you were held on, kind of deal. No martingale, no breastplate, no bell boots. And unfortunately, in the last maybe 20 years, the fads, the things that have come out that I just wish people would really have a look at things and go, you know what? I'm not sure my horse would know what to do with that or understand a rider understanding, you know, some of these bits and all sorts of stuff. Right. So I do think we're coming into an age of the animals are probably taking a big sigh of relief going, finally, they're listening to us, of people being much more aware of what their horses are saying to them. And you get that at the racetrack. My ex was so involved with the pedigree part of the business. When I go to 2-year-old in training sales and I'm spending clients' money on a 2-year-old in training, the last thing I'm looking at is your pedigree, because how do you move? How do you gallop? How do you walk, right? Your walk and your gallop are related. Then I'll look at your pedigree and see if I want to move forward with, you know, investigating this little individual any more than that. But I can tell you right now, 99% of those horses at a racetrack don't want to be there.
Linda, this is like fascinating conversations because my head is just spinning. And I love that you're going into we're finally starting to listen to the horse. And I've always told my students, you know, riding is just a conversation you're having for 45 minutes to an hour. It's just a conversation you're having with your horse. And it's your job to be an active listener, not just the speaker within that. And in my non-horsey life, my regular job, I'm looking at organizations with their skills gaps. And the biggest one I see is active listening and good communication skills. So as a human in general, we are just struggling to stop and listen. We are constantly influenced. You brought up the fad products of, you know, if a top rider is using this equipment, I can buy this, and so my horse will be this. And in truth, it's not every horse wants the same equipment, same comfort, the same way. Not all of us wear the same brands and want the same shoes, pants, all of that, because it doesn't fit us the same. Like, we have our own unique bodies and unique way of moving and our own limitations. So you're bringing up fabulous points that we need to slow down as horsemen and look at our horse and go, okay, what are you really telling me? Because I think we're getting better at it, like you said, but we can take it another step further.
Very much so. Example, a friend of mine has a barn, and there's a whole hunter jumper section in the back that is leased out. And my friend uses one of my tapster girls. She goes, Linda, I can't believe the difference. Again, the horses don't lie. And she made the comment about how frustrating it is to see horse after horse come out in this hunter jumper section, just pissed when a girth gets put on them. The ears are back. They're stomping in the cross ties. And the feedback is they don't care. So to me, that says a lot about the kind of relationship you want with your horse, how important it is that you find, listen, we are a team. I need to make you as comfortable as you can be because I need the performance. Or if you're an amateur, I just want a happy horse, right? But we still have a ways to go. And you know, we all know there's coaches that tell every student what they can and can't use or wear, right? And I empower any student I've coached. You are your horse's voice. And down the road, when you go on and your career goes somewhere else and you have a coach say to you, this is what I want you to do. This is what I want your horse to wear. And if you don't think it's what's in your horse's best interest, you say no.
This is interesting because I think that it's a tough line to walk, right? Like I hear all this and I'm like, yes, like I keep my horses basically as pets. We do some riding anymore. We used to be a little more into showing and working. You know, we have a cattle farm, so we use them a little bit, but the past couple of years we've really started to take a step back. And to me, I'm like, this makes so much sense. I just want to have like that partnership. And I realized that, you know, one of the big economic drivers with horses is people who want to compete, and it's hard to tell people what they don't want to hear, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, we're not like, we don't want to tell someone that their relationship with their horse is wrong because everyone enjoys their horse in a different way, but it can be really hard to like change the way we look at an entire industry. So I think little conversations like this are a great way to get started and new ways of looking at, you know, those everyday products that we use all the time, you know, to say like, look, we've reimagined this. It's a little more comfortable for your horse for this, that, or the other reason. But when you're looking, you know, at the process, like, how do you know to start with the girth, right? Or maybe you don't start with the girth. I don't know. Like, you know, if I have a horse that's a little cranky for saddling, how do I know if it's the girth isn't comfortable or the saddle doesn't fit or there's something wrong with his back or he has ulcers or he's just grumpy? Maybe they're never just grumpy. I don't know. This is where I get a little paralyzed as a horse owner, right? Like, there's so many mm-hmm. problems it could be. So how do you start? How do you know when it's time to try the tapestry girth?
Yeah. You know what? You brought up some great points there, Kristen. Absolutely great points. So you walk into a barn and you see this horse that, you know, yep, I'm starting to tack you up. So what I would suggest to people, what does your horse move like on a lunge line? And not a tiny little circle, but get them out there on a 20 meter. How do you move at the trot? How do you move at the canter, right? Are you level? Are you tracking up? Or do I see something already there? Okay. So what is their attitude in the cross ties? Because a lot of the tack issues start in cross ties, right? So I'm bringing the tack. You're already starting to dance. I put the saddle on you. Ooh, you're starting to give me that eye or that bloating or whatever, right? So I always tell people, you have to rule out soreness. And that can be soreness anywhere in the saddle area, anywhere in the girth area, anywhere physically. Because again, they're trying to talk to you. They're trying to say to you, you know what? I'm not happy. And we have got to be very good listeners. So absolutely spot on. You've got to rule out that, yep, my horse is sore somewhere. And a massage therapist will obviously be able to tell you that, yes, the saddle's pressing. Yes, the girth is causing issues because they can feel that. So you've ruled out soreness. Your horse moves great on a lunge line. Okay, so does my saddle fit? And that's why I've had great success with saddle fitters retailing my girth, because they are right there front row to that horse. And they'll say, look, I just fitted that saddle to your horse. Your horse should be tickety-boo, happy-go-lucky now that that saddle's fitting. You then put a girth on and it's like, oh, look, short striding, still grouchy on cross ties. Okay, Well, then you can focus in on the girth. You mentioned ulcers. So again, ulcers can be very complicated. And yeah, a lot of your racehorses do come off the track with ulcers, because let me tell you something, there's a million different ways to feed a racehorse. They're, you know, the whole confinement issue, you know, to a stalled horse at the racetrack, minimal stimulation mentally and physically for that matter. So yeah, if you're dealing with a horse coming right off the track, yeah, absolutely. If you can check them, great. If not, I would certainly go into a prevention or treating mode for about 3 months once they come off the track and just see, okay, can I help you that way? Ulcers, I think, are also an attitude behavioral thing as well, because they know what's coming. They know what their life is like. They know what happens to them when they get tacked up, how uncomfortable they feel, or if the training isn't quite suited to where they're at in their development or their training progress. I think ulcers also are indicative of that. So You've got a few different things that can be causing ulcers. So, and tack is certainly one of them, for sure, for sure. And, you know, you've got something uncomfortable, you know, down around your abdomen area. Granted, the girth is, you know, quite far up, right, where it is anatomically, but I just think it speaks to the horse's take on its comfort level, right? So Lots of different things can be causing ulcers, but you got to start ruling out all these little things that, okay, I got to make you happy, because bottom line is a happy horse is a happy rider.
Right. Yeah. And that's the fun part. Well, I say fun in air quotes again, right? Of horse ownership is trying to figure out, like, okay, we know there's a problem. What do we do now? I find myself at that crossroads fairly frequently. So This whole podcast is just a series of Kristen spiraling slightly over her horse's latest problem. But yeah, interesting. I love this. Linda, where can people go to learn more about your products and to see where they might get one for themselves?
Yeah, well, my website is tapestryequineproducts.com. I also have a Facebook page, an Instagram page. I'll be honest, I'm not very active on TikTok. But what we try to do on social media, because I find it really important, is it's not just the hard sell, buy, but we have a lot of anatomy and physiological posts, because I really do want people putting it all together. You know, even the riding aspect of it, understand that, you know, if you're trying to ride the horse's head all the time, you're riding the wrong end, right? Mm-hmm. Hind end dictates what the front end does. Ride the middle, ride the hind end, the front end will come, you know, that kind of stuff. Just, so it's a great, I try and have our social media team, let's educate people, let's try and have conversations, that kind of stuff. And also, you know, show how my products literally go right across the spectrum. Jumper, hunter, dressage, reining, you name it. Thoroughbred racehorses. Right across the spectrum. So you've got to show people, right, that, you know what, it's everywhere. Because again, you spoke about it earlier, Kristen, traditional. People look at it and go, oh, that's different. It's the same thing with my Spursuader. I launched that in 2009. That was the first product I invented. Again, out of a need to be kinder.
Love that. I didn't realize that came first.
Yep. That was 2009. And one of my biggest fans for that spur is Bernie Traurig.
Mm, he's a cool dude. We got to talk to him, Joy. We'll get Bernie on here.
Yeah. Great guy. Yeah.
Linda, this has been fascinating. I think we could talk to you for a long time just about, you know, how all these pieces and parts of the process and the horse come together. So thank you so much for joining us today. And folks, tapestryequineproducts.com. Check them out. Tell them Retired Racehorse Radio sent you.
Well, thanks for having me on, ladies. Greatly appreciate it.
Are you interested in learning more about the thoroughbred aftercare industry and the unique challenges facing the individuals, organizations, and businesses that work in this space? The Retired Racehorse Project's Aftercare Industry Month, presented by Thoroughbred Education and Research Foundation, returns in February 2026. This virtual conference includes 4 webinar sessions geared towards anyone with a professional interest in thoroughbred aftercare. Learn more and get registered now at therrp.org under the education menu.
You can enjoy your favorite equine videos all in one place with Ride TV, the ultimate equine streaming platform. The newly relaunched Ride TV has all the series you love, like Mini Horses and Ridiculous Ranches, plus top-tier training videos and event footage from Horse and Rider On Demand and BarrelRacing.com. Live the action, learn from the pros, love the stories. Subscribe to Ride TV today for only $19.99 to see where your ride takes you. Visit RideTVGo.tv to subscribe.
Well, we are back with the Lexington facility of New Vocations. Amanda, welcome back to Retired Racehorse Radio.
It's so great to be back. Hi.
I know you just mentioned it was snowing down there, so it is definitely January for sure.
So sad. Bring on
New
summer.
Year, old weather. Here we go. We're back. So it is a new year. Well, okay. We have already released our first episode of the year, but we recorded that back in December. So as far as we all go, this is a new year for us. This is the first time we've gotten to sit down and actually talk this year. So new year, new crop of thoroughbreds, all just had their, you know, jockey club birthday. I'm sure lots of them haven't actually had their birthday yet, but some of these horses are going to be, you know, putting in a few starts as two-year-olds, maybe a couple starts early as three-year-olds. Then they're going to be retiring, you know, some of the ones that don't show a whole lot of talent early. And then you'll have a different group of thoroughbreds that might be retiring a little bit later in life, like around ages six or seven. So they're both coming into your program, you know, kind of with the same experience, right? Like they raced, they retired, here they are. Do you approach those horses differently, like the three-year-old versus the six or the seven-year-old, especially like in flat work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love them both for completely different reasons, because you have like the two, three-year-old that retired and maybe they had one race. And a lot of the comments we get when these guys come in is sound but slow. And so we know that this is like a completely fresh slate and the number of hours they have on them is very limited. And their attention spans, I find with these guys, are very short. So with those guys, I keep it really, really short and really, really simple and really, really positive as they learn their new role. So we keep, you know, a lot of straight lines. We don't do, you know, we're not doing any 10 meter circles or anything crazy out there. And my biggest focus with them is just, let's just be relaxed. We're not worried about being in a frame or even that much steering. Just keep it light and easy and fun for them. And I find if, you know, after about 20 minutes, they are, you know, mentally cooked.
Mm. Like so, a lot of kids, right?
Yeah.
Like.
Exactly. My children don't have more than about 20 minutes in them and then they're done. So, so I kind of, you know, I try and keep it fun for these babies because they are babies and they're learning, you know, their whole life has, you know, changed. And so we keep it light and easy. We focus on relaxation and long and low, and kind of keep it interesting for them. And then we kind of have the opposite end of the spectrum. We've got the you know, the 6, 8-year-olds come in, and I do always look like, you know, did they race once and then sat, you know, and then came to us? But a lot of these guys, we've got quite a few and new vocations right now that have like 60 plus starts.
Wow.
Yeah, we've got kind of a group of them right now. We've got one that has 75 starts. So, and they, yeah, and they retired sounds too. So they have obviously, you know, they've been to multiple tracks. They've been there. They've done that. They've hauled. They've done all sorts of things. And I love a warhorse because they just, they're locked into work. They like to work. They want to have a job. They want to do something. But it's also completely different to what they're used to. You know, riding around an arena is absolutely not what they're used to. So they might have a longer attention span, but we still, the flat work's still very similar. Like they're not doing 10 meter circles either. They might have a lot more strength and endurance than the young guys. So I might ask for a little bit more of them, but we're still, you know, doing a lot of straight lines, lots of easy, relaxation's a big thing for them because they're kind of expecting you to get on and go. So those guys that we have to spend a lot more time on, let's just walk around the arena. We don't have to go anywhere fast.
This is super interesting because I've never thought much about the ages at which my two thoroughbreds retired. And obviously a sample size of two is not that many horses. You know, like you see many, many more in your line of work. But Jobber retired. He had 30 something starts and he retired, I think, as a 7-year-old. So he didn't start until he was three. And then he was, you know, he was in the claiming ranks, but he didn't run like warhorse quite levels. But he was so much more like mature and ready to work compared to Shorty, who raced until like midway, I think, end of his 3-year-old year. And he's just, he's still a child 9 years later. Like the horse is 12 and he's still just like a giant infant, like putting his mouth on everything and like just doing weird stuff with his tongue. He still doesn't steer at the age of 12. So some of me is wondering like, huh, I wonder if he had like made it through a few more seasons, if he would just be a different animal now, or if he also like would have had the opportunity, you know, to incur more injuries and like not make it. But it does make me wonder like, oh, is it that not just that they are the way they are, like nature versus nurture, but also like Jobber just raced so much longer. So maybe he just came away with a very different mentality than Shorty. So we'll never know, but that, you know, your response to that question is really interesting because it does make me wonder.
Yeah, I definitely think the guys that are out there and they're doing it for years, they have a definite work ethic. And if they retire sound, like I'm an eventer, so I always adopt the war horse because they can hold up. And like my horse that I did RRP with, he raced at like 10 different tracks. So he's seen so much that there's really nothing on a cross-country course that's going to faze him.
Right. And you gave him that good competitive trail background too. That horse is going to be so good.
Yes. Yep. Ugh,
you guys, you did.
Yeah,
right.
Which is why he did so great, because he ended an injury, so we couldn't do eventing at RRP, but we did competitive trail because he's seen everything. He didn't bat an eye at anything on the trail course because he was like, whatever.
I love that. Love it. All right. So for people looking for horses with few starts, you have a perfect adoptable horse for us this evening. Tell us about this name. I love this horse's name. Please introduce this horse for us.
So this is, and when I saw her come in my inbox, I was excited. She is called Bowtie or No Tie.
That is excellent.
I love it. So we call her Bo. She is a 2022 mare and she's just gorgeous. She's just she's the perfect height. She's 15'3", so she's not too big. She's not too small. She's compact, but beefy. And I think if you think of every thoroughbred stereotype that's out there and you go in the complete opposite direction, that's her. Like, this mare has done very little, but she is like destined to be like, she just wants an up and downer and she just wants to jog around the arena at a snail's pace. She has really no limitations, but she's not in a hurry to go anywhere.
I love that. I love the kind that have no limitations, but they're like mentally, I would like to have some limitations, right? Like they're like, just leave me alone. Like, let me punk around and do my thing. I love
that. Yeah, I'm like, she's not going to go be a jumper and light up the jumping ring because she's just going to be like, oh, that looks exhausting.
Joy, this one is looking pretty appealing
a new mother. I've sent her already to a couple people who are shopping for this type of horse because I feel like a horse this young and like has the athletic capability is so hard to find.
Yeah, and you can just like hop on her bareback and just poodle around and she will just love it.
I mean this in a flattering way. I don't want people to misinterpret this. She looks like a big pony. And I don't mean in like a plucky pony way, but like she just has like that nice, just like steady look to her where she's like, yeah, whatever. Let's just
go. I love like that My Little Pony mare. It's so fun to do like the matching sets and dress up with them. They tend to be very Instagrammable, TikTok worthy. Just speaking from experience.
Yeah, and she has that nice classic bay. She's got some chrome. There's like four little socks on here and a stripe. Yeah, she wants to like, yeah, exactly. She wants to go in the matching saddle pad and bell boots and polo shirt thing.
Yeah, she doesn't want to go cross country. She wants to be an Instagram model for sure.
I love this. Well, Amanda, remind the good listeners how they get their name on the list to bring horses like this home.
Yes, absolutely. So I always say, like, become an approved adopter before you see a horse that you want, because some of these guys go so quickly. So just have your application done so that when you do see the horse of your dreams, you can email me and I can send her home with you. So if you're not an approved adopter yet, you know, go on our website, fill out the application and get approved, and then watch the website. And if you see one, you know, shoot me an email. The links are on there and we will... I'm excited to match people with their dream horses like this one.
What a fun job. Equine matchmaker.
I love it.
All right, folks, newvocations.org or horseadoption.com, and tell them that Retired Racehorse Radio sent you. You can find our show notes and links to today's guests on the website at horseradionetwork.com. Like us on Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Retired Racehorse Radio. Follow the network on Twitter at Horse Radio. You can find me on Instagram and Threads at The Horseback Rider, and you can follow along with our new farm adventures on Instagram at Painted Forest Farm. My email is kristen@horseradionetwork.com.
So excited to follow all of your farm adventures, by the way. You can find me on Instagram at MisfitMare, and my email is joy@horseradionetwork.com. Thank you to our sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products and Ride TV, and to our partners, New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program and the Retired Racehorse Project. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network at horseradionetwork.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show as it helps us grow and keep bringing you all the off-the-track content that you love. Remember to set your goals high and love to learn from every ride.
And as always, cow side leg.
I missed you guys. Bye.